Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Well, welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today I have the pleasure of having sports commentator Lisa Belkow-Snyder. She's going to talk about sports. If you have any questions, please call in at 347-324-3460, or you can pose a question in the chat room, and I'll go ahead and read it on the air. Lisa, thank you for joining the program.
Oh, thank you so much. It's always great to be on.
Great. Now, I'm going to confess I'm kind of sports challenged. A musician at heart, a business person. So you're going to have to guide me through some of the sports talk. So I guess to begin with, kind of just recap what happened at the draft last week.
Absolutely. The Cincinnati Bengals have kind of been the punchline for a lot of jokes, and football fans around the country will know that. I think ever since Ocho Cinco took off, they haven't been a whole lot of fun to watch. So many of those have really been aimed at the owner, the general manager, Mike Brown. They have a very skimpy scouting staff, and other teams privately laugh at how they refuse to spend bigger money on scouting. And so maybe Mike Brown actually got it right. After all, his team, the Cincinnati Bengals, had the best draft day of any of the 32 NFL teams this year. They pretty much dominated the draft. They walked away with 10 solid football players, all with a chance to make the team. I know it's almost unheard of. Even a sixth-round running back, Dan Heron from Ohio State, that was a very good pick. There was another top pick, Dre Kirkpatrick, who will likely be a week one starter, while several others have a chance to start. So in my grading scenario of how I grade various teams now, mind you, I'm not an analyst. I don't have a draft board in my house. You know, I'm a commentator. I'm a radio personality on sports talk, and my show, which airs weekend mornings on a sports network, it's called Mile High Sports, and you can reach it streaming online if you're outside of Denver, is the lighter side of sports. You know, it's like, let's take what happened all week long and really break it down into, okay, what are we talking about here? What's the main theme? What's the main purpose? And the main purpose is that the Bengals got an A+. I mean, they had a 3-day pickathon that really netted them a lot of good football players. Did you have a favorite team? Because I could give you the grade. I could give you how I graded them.
Now, you know, I'm going to ask about Dallas and Houston. I'm from Houston. I live in Dallas. So, of course, I'm going to ask about that. But kind of tell us, for the people who don't know anything about football, how this draft works, can you talk about how this whole system works for the people who don't know how the system works?
Of course. To break it down super, super easy, because up until 4 or 5 years ago, I really didn't know how the draft worked either. But basically what they do is, I know, surprise, is they take the top football players at all of the schools who have teams in the country, and they invite them to something in the late winter, early spring called the Combine. Now, have you heard of the Combine?
No.
And basically, the NFL, it's a pre-draft Combine where basically they invite the top players, the top linebackers, the tackles, the quarterbacks, the corners, the safeties, the guards, every position in football. And what they do is they go, there's a committee who looks at a lot of film, and I don't watch film at all. They look at a lot of film from these colleges and universities, not just the big ones that you know of, but like, you know, the little ones, the little ones out in Florida and, you know, the little Arizona State and this one and that. And they take the top players in those positions and they invite them to something called the Combine. And what the Combine is it's basically like a boot camp. And they put these players through the rigors. They have to take a mental test. They have to take a physical test. You know, how high, what's their vertical jump? What, how, with quarterbacks, how's their arm? How far can they throw? They do running drills. They do suicides. They do, you know, sprints. And they're timed on all of these. So then what a lot of the scouts do and a lot of the coaches do and a lot of the executive vice presidents of football operations of the 32 teams is they go to the combine and they check these kids out. And from there, they get invited. They, meaning the kids again, they get invited to be a part of the draft. Or if they're not invited to the draft, some people, some teams may look outside. Once the draft is over, they may look outside to say, you know what, this kid looks really interesting. I know he wasn't invited to be drafted, because when you're drafted, that means that that team has a commitment to you and you have a commitment to them to, you know, be committed to each other, and that you will not go for sake of another phone call from another team who's offering you another $1 million. You're like, no, I've already committed to the Bengals, or I've already committed to the Cowboys, or whatever it happens to be. So it's from college football to the combine, from the combine to the draft, and from the draft, hopefully, to an NFL team.
Wow. So what's the likely chance that a person who's coming from college getting invited, of course, you're part of the top pick throughout the country, but what's the likelihood that they, out of that top, I'm sure with all the colleges across the country, are they asking for the top of every single team? Okay, you're going to send two or three people? Or is just the top three people from each school? I mean, it could be a massive amount of people there. So how do we actually discern which one?
It could be. And there's a committee that figures all those bells and whistles out. But I think what they do is, like, for example, two draft picks came from Stanford. Andrew Luck, of course, was picked as the number one pick in the first round as a quarterback to go to Indianapolis Colts. Well, later on in the draft, one of his teammates, who I think is an offensive lineman or maybe a tackle, also got picked from Stanford to go play for the Indianapolis Colts. You know, stuff like that doesn't happen by accident. You want to have, or actually, no, it had to be a receiver, because he's used to catching the ball from Andrew Luck. So how smart is it of the Indianapolis Colts to pick a team like that, to pick the team of Andrew Luck and the guy who he's always used to throwing to continue to train at the next level? So, yeah, I mean, it could be, I mean, there's hundreds of players who are invited, but there's, I believe, six, maybe seven rounds. The first round was on a Thursday night. The second round was on a Friday. And then everything wraps up round three through, I believe, six or seven will happen on Saturday. And that was a week ago. So it's done. And but there are some guys who will get drafted but may not make it through training camp. So there's a lot of draft busts out there in the world that just didn't make it.
So when they make it through this particular process, and if they get on the team, you have so many people on the team, will the team normally will say, hey, I'm going to give you a chance, or how will they have to work themselves up through the system to get noticed? So
well,
you have
to
get picked to get on the team.
They usually start out with about 88 some players. And they have to narrow it down, I believe, to 52, maybe 54 by the time the preseason starts, or by the time the official season starts. So you have your preseason games, you put your players in who have been maybe a little questionable, like, they're just on that bubble. You know, do we get them? Do we not get them? Let's put them in a preseason position. Let's see what happens. And either they're in or they're out. But they bring in these guys for training camp. And training camp usually, I believe, starts in July. But teams start at a different point because preseason's in August. So maybe training camp starts in June. But everybody's already reported. All the teams have opened their locker rooms. Everybody's doing their thing. They're informally having, voluntary training sessions. And then at the end of the day, at the end of training camp, they make their cuts. And then at the end of the preseason, they make their final cut, and they're down to their 52 players.
Wow. The likelihood if they're going through that whole system, if they make the team, if they make the cut, they still gonna have to perform. They can't just take for granted, hey, I made it. You never made it. You're as good as your last game.
Exactly. No, I mean, look,
right.
here in Denver. I mean, we've let go two quarterbacks, Kyle Orton and I can't think of his name now. It's gotten me confused. He plays for the Rams. But they were picks. They were quarterbacks. They were, you know, initially the face of the franchise, and they're gone. There's no guarantee.
Wow.
There's not
no guarantee.
That many. No, there's not that many Brett Favre's. There's not that many Eli and Peyton Manning's out in the world. There's not that many Roger Staubach and all the other big guys now who are basically analysts on the mm-hmm. NFL Network or NFL TV. You know, you're born with a God-given talent, and some of it is nurtured along the way, and you happen to be one of the lucky ones, and some of it mm-hmm. you really have to continue to work for, and you have to continue to work at. Very few walk-ons in the NFL.
Wow. So why is that? You know, if we go back to, the good games, I mean, they play it for the sense of the sport, like Michael Jordan say. You know, that generation is gone. What happened within the last 20 years that we don't have that anymore? They're all about the money. They're all about the prestige. They're all about gimme, gimme, gimme. What happened to that?
Yeah, it's very interesting you talk about that, because that kind of gets into the bounty, scandal going on with the New Orleans Saints. I think because, it's funny you mentioned Michael Jordan. I just interviewed his mother, Dolores, yesterday, and she will be on my show this weekend, talking about the good old-fashioned days of just playing sports. And I'm not sure about the other sports in general, but I can tell you for sure that Roger Goodell in the NFL is going to look completely different, 5 to 10 years from now. You have these concussion discussions. You have this terrible, terrible suicide of Junior Seau yesterday from the Oakland Raiders, even
mm-hmm.
though he was Oakland Raiders, and then, to Florida and to the Patriots. He's a Raider, heart to heart, and the town is very much hurting at this loss.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it comes from the sponsorships, greediness, capitalism, throwing money at these guys. They say money isn't a motivator. Oh, yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, it is.
Oh, yes, it is.
First of all, just recently, a matter of hours before Roger Goodell announced yesterday what are extremely harsh punishments, for New Orleans Saints players involved in the Bowdy scandal. One of those disciplined is linebacker Jonathan Vilma. He made an interesting change to his Twitter account. He took the photo of him glaring on the front of the Sports Illustrated cover story about the Saints scandal and made it his avatar. So he took his picture off and put in like a generic cartoon. It was a startling moment of extreme arrogance. Vilma was basically flaunting it. When a follower asked Vilma on Twitter why he was using that photo as his avatar, he responded, "Because John Vilma can." So essentially what he did is just, it's like in your face. Like he was proud of it because he was one of the big leaders of the Saints who was putting up his own money to encourage guys to take out Kurt Warner in a playoff game. I mean,
No, I mean, it's, you know, that's what I'm thinking about, you know, playing something on a game. You know, when I was teaching, we started having kids come in through the system. I mean, just really good gamers. Do you think they just desensitize to the notion that you actually maim it and can really maim someone and can really seriously hurt them? You think he's just immune to that? Is there just immunity shield is up there and he just don't get it?
I don't think he does. I don't think he cares, quite honestly. I don't think he cares. I think he said, you know, he's going to go before Roger Goodell and he will appeal this because, you know, they said he's going to go before the judge. Well, the judge in this case for any of the players is Roger Goodell. You know, now keep in mind, most people think Roger Goodell is the NFL. He's not. He's an employee, but he is the commissioner. And he is supposed to make sure that things go clean and go right for the NFL, for the NFLPA, the Players Association. I mean, it's going to be a long road. And the bounty system has got to go. I mean, some people say it plays in the NHL during playoffs because the NHL has become very dirty. So who's to say? I think he's brazen. I think he's immature talking about Vilma. I think that, you know, I don't know if any players will come down on him to say, yeah, you know, I was the one. He came after me. He's like, dude, I'll give you $10,000 if you can do such and such and such. I don't know if one player will call out against another, but I can tell you in the world of baseball, Andy Pettit is now backpedaling against Roger Clemens because Roger Clemens is now up in Congress under court for lying to Congress in 2008 that he claims he did not take metabolic steroids. And back in 2008, Andy Pettit said, he told me he took them. Well, now they put Andy Pettit back on the stand and he's backpedaling. He said, I think you misunderstood my conversation. What? Didn't seem to be a whole lot of misunderstanding, but I think he's second-guessing going up against his friend. So who's to say what these football players are going to do? That, you know, yes, Jonathan Vilma did tell me, you take this guy out, you injure him, you get into his ACL, you go for the back, you go for the shoulder, I'm going to give you $10,000 out of my own pocket. Who's going to go up against Jonathan Vilma for that? I don't know. It all remains to be seen.
Hey, you mentioned earlier a few minutes ago regarding Junior and concussions. And I know it's one of the ills of playing contact sports like that. When you're dealing with football, you're going to get some type of head injury. You know, boxing have the same thing. You know, we really didn't look at it until something really happened to Muhammad Ali. But when you have that type of situation, and with technology today, they have better gear and equipment, or you think the NFL has turned a blind eye to what's going on? I mean, suicides, you know, they do have those, but do they think that having those concussions are kind of compromising the person's ability, you know, may have that spirit to just to take off their life? Do they think it's a problem? Do they think they're isolated incidents?
Now, I think that they're now saying that it's a problem. I mean, there's always been what I've called the concussion discussion, and I talk about it all the time, and I bring in experts for my show, especially with youth football, because this is how it all starts, and they say, well, if you teach them how to play young, they learn how to hit in the right way. But, you know, I have to say, Boston University, which happens to be where I went to college many, many years ago, their School of Medicine has gotten into a program where they are recruiting football players while they are alive to commit to donating their brains to the School of Medicine after they have passed away for whatever reason, whether they're in their 80s or, you know, they're in their 40s or in by however means they pass, by however means they die, because they feel that there is a correlation between concussions and many other nerve damaging diseases, brain debilitating diseases. And, you know, it's almost like what comes first, the depression, the concussion, the pills for pain when you get injured. I believe he had in 2008, Junior had a very, very bad knee or ankle injury, and he was on painkillers. Now, he wasn't addicted. He didn't have to go to rehab, but he was on painkillers. So some people say coming off of painkillers causes depression if you're addicted. Nobody's really talking about that issue right now. You know, it's, but I think the fact that he shot himself in the chest, which obviously preserves the brain, is a very key telltale sign that he wanted to have his brain studied.
Yeah, absolutely. Because usually they will shoot themselves in the head for some reason.
Shoot yourself in the chest, it's not an automatic. I mean, you could have up to 15, 20 minutes of pain, agony, bleeding out. It's not an automatic death, you know, unless you go right for the heart and their heart stops. So, but yeah, shooting in the head is, you know, and unfortunately the Chargers have, I mean, if you do a roll call, you'll find that linebacker Lou Bush died last December from a heart attack. Defensive lineman Chris Mims died the same year. He had an enlarged heart. Sean Lee was also a victim of cardiac arrest. Running back Rodney Culver was killed in a plane crash. Linebacker David Griggs was killed in a car crash. Linebacker Doug Miller was struck by lightning. Center Curtis Whiteley died of a drug overdose. I mean, it's the San Diego sports curse. And now there's this, which is, you know, the cruelest blow of all, because Sal not only was the best player on that team, he was the face of the franchise. You know, along with quarterback Dan Fouts and running back LaDainian Tomlinson, he was the most popular Charger of the past 30 years. And even though he left San Diego for Miami in 2003, he was never really far removed from the city. He was active in the community. He had a popular restaurant. He was very jovial, very animated when people would come in. And too many former football players die much too young, with Sal being the latest. But too many former football players are gone from one team, and it's this 1994 San Diego Chargers. And everyone at the Chargers is really in complete shock and disbelief right now. They don't know if the team have a sports curse, but what they do know is that another tragic event has, you know, come upon this team, and it's a hurt that's not going to go away for a very long time, and it will obviously be discussed. I know that there is a drug company out there who I worked with last year who has a portion of their company with a division to help retired NFL veterans get better health care insurance and to kind of matriculate into life after pro football. It's just because when you're done, you've retired or you've been released from your team, well, now what? You know, the big cash flash is gone. The sponsorships are over. What are you going to do? Are you going to go sell real estate? Are you going to go into the mortgage business? Most guys don't know what to do in the afterlife of sports. And it's a shame.
And I've met a few over the course of many years. And they've actually went to corporate America, and they seem to understand. All of a sudden, something came to them, and they've been doing successful and working or starting their own businesses. I remember the first person I really met, which I just said, "Oh my gosh!" This was like in the '80s. I was still in college, and I remember Gerald Irons, I think his name was, football player out of the '70s, and. Ironically, I was there looking for office space for a company I was working for, just finished out of college in 89. And he said, you know, I said, well, you look familiar. And he said, well, I used to play for, I can't remember what team he played for, it's been so long ago, but it was like, I said, wow. So you're working in the Woodlands and you're working in corporate and you're doing leasing. And he worked for the Woodlands Corporation, Metro Energy then, and he was one of a prime leasing person that's selling all the properties, commercial properties in the Woodlands. So it was kind of a eye-opening. I think they is you think, okay, do they have a life beyond football? But, of course, he did, and he had a great life. He said, well, think about this. I have one of the best golf courses, best communities in the country to live in. And, of course, if you've seen the Woodlands, really, really nice, and it's like a resort town. But kind of life at the football, and that was kind of my first opening eye experience with someone who has been in the NFL that close, that they adjust to, you know, our life.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about,
yeah,
if you don't mind.
It is a rude awakening.
Yeah, coming from Minions, and, you know, he still did well, and he had a good, comfortable life. Let's talk about Lamar, and then let's kind of talk about the Houston and the Dallas teams. But what happened to Lamar with the Mavericks?
You know, I think it was a domino effect of just progressive fallout. He had family tragedy. He had some physical ailments. He wasn't able to just rise above and couldn't do what he needed to do for the Lakers. So they traded him to Dallas, and which was an emotional demotion. You know, even though Dallas was the NBA champs from last year, it's not that bad to be sent off from the Lakers. I mean, it's the Lakers, for goodness sakes, you know, and that hurt. And then he really wasn't pulling his weight in Dallas, so they sent him down to the D League. And it just wasn't meant to be. And I just don't think he ever really recovered. Plus, I mean, my God, look what he lives with. You know, he lives with Triple K, you know, all the Kardashians and Khloe and all the craziness that's going on. And you've got that bananas mother-in-law who is, you know, Kim. I mean, oh, not Kim, or what is her name?
Kim.
Chris Kardashian, yeah. The mother. Oh, my God. And she's dictating, and I heard, you know, through a semi-reliable source that she is encouraging Khloe to divorce him. He's a nothing.
Wow.
He's an albatross around our neck. You know, he's not producing. I mean, it's almost like Kim and Chris Humphries. You know, they got married. The NBA was in the middle of a lockout. She knew he wasn't income producing. She knew that he, you know, didn't have a job when she married him. And she's like, you know what? You're just sitting around. You're feeding off of my fame and my name. And yes, it's been 72 days. Goodbye. And I kind of feel that the Kardashian gals feel, and again, I'm just speculating as one woman looking on another woman's family life, that you're making us look bad, and it's time for you to go. The NBA thought so, and now so do we.
Well, you know, when you look at society, I mean, they're privileged, and, you know, everybody can't be who they are, and everybody don't wish to be who they are, but I mean, it's just a really, really, I felt bad for him, you know, just to see his expression on Good Morning America, and he didn't, when you don't want to talk about it, either there's two ways, you're going to be at one extreme, hate at one end, or you have this, like, this went over your head, and you just can't believe it, it's in this surreal moment, and his expression, he was truly, truly hurt about this, and he just barely couldn't even talk about it, and he just would try to pull his mind through something else because it really, really hurted him. It hurt, and you can see it on his expression. I think just even watching Ryan O'Neal still talk about Farrah today, he took it for real, and I don't know how Kim felt about it, but oh my gosh, the hurt that you see on his face, that he really meant it. But I just real feel sorry for Lamar. The stress, yes, you're coming from a franchise. Dallas is not bad. Dallas have a lot of support behind it, and they're kind of a real loyal team. But it's, you know, really sad that it didn't work out. if we segue into our football team and segue to Houston, let's go talk about Houston and then back up to the Cowboys. But what's wrong with Houston?
How about what's right with Houston?
Yeah, the fourth largest city. I mean, have plenty of resources. You know, coming from Houston, we understand that, you know, Bud wanted his football stadium. Texas, Houston did not want to pay for it. And I said, I'm going to take it somewhere else. And he took his bluff, and he did go somewhere else. And I said, okay, we're going to build a team. We're going to build a stadium anyway, you know. So what happened with that?
Well, I can't speak to very much about all that, but I can tell you how they did in the draft, which really wasn't too bad. The third-round pick of Brandon Brooks can play either guard or tackle, so that was really their best pick, which is the two trouble spots for the Texans on the right side. He's physical. Mm-hmm. He's an athletic player. The third day, on Saturday, they did a really good pick, this kid from Nebraska, defensive end Jared Crick. He was in the fourth round, and were it not for an injury last year, he probably would have gone higher. So they kind of get a B in my book.
Wow. So that.
Sorry. So I don't know if that's good or bad for you, coming from Houston or being interested in Houston, but a B is not enough. So that's kind of good news. Now, if you want to talk real quick before I need to go about your Dallas Cowboys, their best pick is they traded up. I don't know if you watched the draft at all, but they traded up to land a corner, Morris Claiborne, who was a great move for the Cowboys. They landed the best cover player in the draft with a very smart move to move up. Now, a lot of teams were moving down because they saw good talent still in the second round and they could get it for cheaper money. They actually get a B+. So they beat Houston a little bit by a small margin. It's hard to argue with moving up to get Morris Claiborne, who gives the Cowboys their best cover player in years. They did give up a second round pick, though, to do it, but it made sense because in the third round they got an end by the name of Tyrone Crawford. So I don't feel too bad for your Cowboys. And who is the last team you wanted me to look at for you?
Well, I think that was it.
Was it just Houston and Dallas?
Houston and Dallas. I think we don't care about the rest.
We don't care about the rest. Okay.
Well, thanks
for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
No, I really appreciate you coming on and kind of educating us. I appreciate your time and coming back on the program. Lisa, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, have a great day. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. This has been another production of the Core Business Show with Tim Jaquet. Thank you guys for listening, and happy sports. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jaquet. For a free quote on equipment leasing and financing, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. And fill out the information to receive your free quote. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. Thanks again for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jaquet.